This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. 2012 was a tough one for comedian Tig Notaro. She was in and out of the hospital with an intestinal infection. Her mother died suddenly. She broke up with her longtime girlfriend. And the kicker? She was diagnosed with cancer. On August 3rd, she walked onto the stage for her regular gig at Largo in Los Angeles and began her act.
Good evening. Hello. I have cancer. How are you? Hi, how are you? Is everybody having a good time? I have cancer. How are you? It's a good time. Diagnosed with cancer. Feels good. Just diagnosed with cancer.
And with that startlingly personal admission, her career took off. A documentary team filmed her undergoing treatment for stage 2 breast cancer. Now 44, after a double mastectomy, she's back on the road, out with a new TV special, writing a memoir, and on her way to the Hop at Dartmouth on Wednesday. Tig Notaro, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, let's start with Knock Knock. It's Tig Notaro, which premiered on Showtime last month. So the premise is that people send in submissions for you to come and perform in their hometowns or even their homes or backyards. You got more than 1,000 submissions. How did you decide where to go?
Well, I've done the tour previously, and this was the first time it was filmed for release in any way. And the way I've always done it is just to have an idea of a route that I want to go on and then take all submissions and then really focus on the area that I have in mind, but then kind of allow myself the freedom to go to a different town or veer outside of the tour that I've scheduled beforehand.
So you did go to southern Indiana. You go to Pluto, Mississippi. Now, you were born in Mississippi, I guess, and raised outside of Houston, yeah?
Yeah, I was born in Jackson, Mississippi, and then we moved down to the Gulf Coast to past Christian, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Spring, Texas, which is a smaller town outside of Houston.
Yeah, you dropped out of high school. Did you know then you wanted to be a comedian?
No, I pretty much just knew I did not want to be in school. I failed 3 grades and dropped out. And I mean, I was definitely the mischievous class clown in school, but I didn't really know. I loved stand-up as a kid, and I followed it and listened to records and stuff, but I just I didn't know for sure, I think, until I was in my early 20s.
Well, I guess you were kind of doing your bit or establishing your bona fides because a lot of comedians began as miscreants, don't they?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I always, whenever I'm hanging out with my friends in Los Angeles, I always refer to everyone as the land of misfit toys from, you know, those claymation shows.
Right, from the Santa Claus is coming.
Yeah,
to,
yeah.
Right. So what's the appeal for you as a performer playing to these little stages? I mean, I thought that once you get big, you don't perform for 9 people anymore.
Well, I appreciate that you think I'm big. I don't know. I think there's comedy is always great in awkward and unsafe environments. And I think that that's kind of a way that you can get back to that, because walking into a comedy club when you're a known comedian or you have a very worked out show, it is a pretty safe ride. But when you are working out new material or you have no material, which is what happened to me on that tour, I had no new material. I relied on a few old jokes in that taping, but in general, I was trying to get my feet wet again after having old material and then announcing that I had cancer in this show a couple of years ago. And then it kind of cleaned my slate with material where when I got back out, I was like, God, I really don't have anything. And so it puts you into that unsafe, exciting environment, being in someone's living room.
That it sounds terrifying to me.
It is. Trust me.
And
but
awkward.
It's also exhilarating.
Yeah, is it? So do you feel like you've come away from that experience with what?
I can't wait to do it again.
Really?
Yeah. I hope it turns into a TV show down the road.
But you used to be known anyway as a deadpan comic, not offering a lot of clues about who you are. And then this, after initially announcing that you had cancer at that show at Largo.
Oh, my God. It's weird because with humor, the equation is tragedy plus time equals comedy. I am just at tragedy right now. That's just where I am in the equation. Oh, it's fine. Here's what happened. It's very personal. Found a lump. Guys, relax. Everything's fine. I have cancer.
I'm thinking of those hours beforehand. I mean, did you decide you were going to do this? Did you rehearse it? What happened?
Well, I had several days. I was diagnosed on July 25th, and the show was August 3rd. And so I spent those days just reflecting on how I felt. And I had originally wanted to cancel the show, but the owner of the club suggested I just keep the show and see how I felt right up to the last second. And if I didn't want to do it, I could cancel. So I kept it on the books, and then I just kept writing and seeing how I felt. And I knew that I couldn't have, because aside from cancer, my mother died unexpectedly after an accident, and I was in the middle of a breakup, and I had another illness where I couldn't eat food. I was really at rock bottom. And so I could not bring myself to get on stage with a cancer diagnosis and, you know, a skeletal frame of a body and just be like, oh, my gosh. So I was traveling the other day, you know, and just make lighthearted jokes. I felt like I had something massive staring me in the face, and I needed to acknowledge it and hopefully make light of it. And so, and yeah, it wasn't my typical style, but before I walked on stage, I was so nervous because I knew I was about to do something I had never done and that I had no clue how it was going to go. And, so the safety was definitely gone there.
He made huge news. Louis C.K., among others, praised your set. He said it was one of the few truly masterful sets he'd ever seen. People talk about you on stage. I'm wondering what you saw in the audience as you were looking out.
I mean, it was such a mix of confused people waiting for the punchline and just shock and awkward laughter. And then the more I kept talking about things, the more it became clear that it wasn't a joke. It was just really a setup of, you know, truth so that I could explore all the different aspects of what I was going through and make light of it. And once people started to realize it was true, I also saw people crying in the audience, and it was really a mixed bag to look out into. And it was also a reality check, letting me know that this was really happening. It was kind of hard to comprehend everything. Very surreal moments that I would go in and out of.
And now when you hear those clips of you doing that, I mean, what do you think? I mean, do you feel like...
Oh. I don't listen to those clips. I mean, honestly, if somebody's playing it in an interview or... And it's not just from that show that it's hard to listen to. It's hard to listen to anything of myself. I really can't think of anything worse than hearing myself. And it's not like, oh, that this is such a hard time and painful time. It's just, oh my gosh, I can't hear myself. I used to listen to myself when I was first starting out as a stand-up, and I would record all my shows. And even now when I'm working out new material, I'll sometimes record the audio. But I always think it's a funny sight if somebody walked in and heard me listening to my audio, because I'm telling jokes. You hear the audience laughing, and my face is very stoic and serious listening. My face does not look like I understand comedy at all when I'm listening very intently.
The comedian Tig Notaro is with us. She is going to be performing at the Hop at Dartmouth on Wednesday. She's also going to be taping a live HBO special at the Wilbur Theater in Boston on May the 31st. Do people now who have cancer seek you out? I mean, do they think you're kind of the cancer comic, the one who's been through it?
I don't know what people think, but I certainly get quite the mix of people at my shows, from podcast fans that listen to my podcast, comedy nerds, and cancer survivors, and just every person across the board. And it's really an interesting mix of people. People that have just had a bad day and listened to my show from 2012, had a bad day at the office, and they were like, wow, that really put things into perspective for me. And so I don't know what brings people to me, but I know it seems to be, you know, from casting a wide net through all the different avenues I've taken along the way.
How are you doing now? How's your health?
I always say, as far as I know, it's really good. I'm actually going to my oncologist in a couple hours, and I'm 3 years of no evidence of disease.
Wow.
Which is
hooray.
Terrific.
People who cheat death often have an air of invincibility. How about you? Did it embolden you to try new things? I mean, you're writing a memoir now. There is just a documentary about you, this television documentary.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I've always tried new things, and I've gone out on a limb, and I think I didn't realize that until I saw the completed documentary about my life. It's supposed to be coming out this summer.
And right, this is Tig?
Yeah, it's called Tig. And after I watched the movie, I was like, wow, I take chances. Mm. And I take serious risks. And I didn't realize that about my personality. But I think more than risks that are gigantic, I think cheating death makes me more of somebody more open to be celebrating daily things and anniversaries, birthdays, just any celebratory moment. Or I was writing about this in my book yesterday, about how as a child I got soaps, a little box of soaps that were in the shape of combs and brushes and mirrors, and they seemed too special to ever use. And so I never used them. And then I don't ever know where they went. And I was just reflecting on how I should have just, the day I got them when I was five, I should have gotten in the bathtub and used them. And I think there's more of that feeling of, I'm going to use the soaps that come in the shape of a hand brush or a mirror, you know?
You know, I've heard this expression, it's not what happens to you, it's what you do with it. And I couldn't help but think that, listening to the tape of you talking about having cancer after this year of unbelievable shock and grief.
Four months. Yeah.
Compact time of shock and grief and ill health. But looking back at it, I mean, would you do this any differently? Would you have treated that? Would you have kept it private?
No. I was already private. And this is what blew the doors off of privacy and making me realize that it helped me to communicate. It helps every situation to be open and vulnerable and communicative. And every door opened in my personal life, my love life, my career, my family, my friends. There's rarely any time in life where you withhold and really see a payoff.
Tig Notaro, thank you so much. I'm really glad you're on your way to New Hampshire.
I can't wait to be there. So thanks for your time.
Tig Notaro, she's a stand-up comedian. She's got a memoir in the works for 2016, a documentary film called Tig, and a documentary on Showtime. And she's going to be at the Hop at Dartmouth on Wednesday. She's taping a live HBO special at the Wilbur Theater in Boston on May 31st. You'll find details on all of it at wordofmouthradio.org.